Scampering into our car was a man who had introduced himself to me several years earlier at an event where I had delivered a talk. Actually, we had hit it off pretty well and became quite friendly, although not to the point where we socialized together. I ran into him periodically in local stores, and we would spend anywhere from 15 minutes to an entire hour gabbing, depending upon the circumstances. He didn't live near me, but his work brought him to the area on a regular basis. He was moving quickly toward me, accompanied by a pre-adolescent boy. "Let's go grab a seat," he said, taking hold of my arm as he entered, practically dragging me along. I looked back helplessly at Paul, who had seen what happened and who followed on our heels. Dave headed for a pair of facing seats on the lower level of the bi-level car. It would be less crowded there and would allow us a greater degree of privacy for conversation. Dave was a hardcore UFO enthusiast and our conversations invariably centered on that topic. In fact, it was difficult to talk about anything else because even a mention of the weather would give him an opening to turn the subject back to UFOs and alien abductions. He and the boy slid into a seat and I took a facing one. As I was scooting over to the window, Paul made a casual entrance and immediately sat down beside me. He put his briefcase on top of the small table that separated the two sets of seats. I nearly gasped. This was going to be damn interesting, I thought. I fully expected some reaction from Dave and or the boy, but they expressed none. Even though Paul had arrived on the scene looking to me like just another commuter, obviously he was undetectable to others. When he hadn't stopped at the ticket vending machine, that should have tipped me off, but I didn't make the connection at the time. Paul winked, gave me a mischievous smile, and faded to an apparition even as the briefcase simply disappeared. This was surreal enough to shock even a spiritualist who holds seances, practices voodoo, talks to the dead, or engages in other activities of a mystical, paranormal, or metaphysical nature. For a person such as myself, this was almost too much to absorb. The only element that made it tolerable and kept my heart from hammering through my chest while it was already halfway into my throat was that I had been exposed to such a variety and number of paranormal surprises in recent years that I suppose my central nervous system had become somewhat inured to the excitement. So why even bother fading to an apparition in my eyes? I never got around to asking, but I must admit that he was a less distracting presence in that form, barely detectable in my peripheral vision, in which case my eyes wouldn't keep wandering to him. I suspect that was his purpose. But quite frankly, this habit of his of flitting in and out of his various forms, particularly when he seemed fully incarnate for all to see when in actual fact he was visible only to me, even dressed to the nines, was beginning to wear on my nerves. The boy with Dave was a handsome young man who appeared to be about 12 or 13 years old. He had fascinating green eyes that almost seemed to glitter and a shock of light brown hair just on the shy side of blondish. With those two features, not unlike those of Nordic types, I would expect a pale skin color, but the child's complexion was a contrasting darker shade somewhere between tan and bronze. The effect was quite striking, and I could imagine that in not too many years he would become the object of many young ladies' attention. He had a dazzling smile that contrasted wonderfully with the pink lips and the bronze skin tones. "Haven't seen you for a while," Dave said. "Where you heading?" "The boy and I are just going exploring. I've been busy with work, too busy, and decided to take the day off, spend some quality time together. We were just going to roam around LA." "Oh, this is my son, Marco." Dave was a non-stop talker. He could bend my ear for hours if I let him and if he had the time. Fortunately, he didn't always have the time, and when he did I usually excused myself after about an hour. I liked him, but his talkative nature did tend to wear a body down after a while. Dave was rather ordinary looking, almost nondescript, probably in his early to mid-40s. As for the boy, I found myself staring at him and thinking that his mother must be a real looker. I couldn't detect even the slightest resemblance to his father. "As in Polo?" I asked. I had never met anyone named Marco before. "Correct," the boy said as he reached out a hand to me. He had a surprisingly firm grip that belied both his size and level of maturity as represented by his age. That is, A boy's handshake is often weak and flaccid, an indicator of inexperience and the timidity he feels upon meeting an adult stranger. As he gains maturity and experience, particularly if he's an alpha male, his grip firms up concurrent with his growing confidence in himself. Men who never do develop a firm handshake immediately telegraph to the person they are greeting that they are shy, at the very least, and quite possibly insecure. I told Dave that I too was just bumming around, taking a day off, although that sounded odd even to my ears because I had been retired for years. As far as the world was concerned, every day for me was a day off. For just a moment, I flashed on the familiar theme of all of the workers on the copy desks back at the Times and felt a twinge of sympathy for them, cooped up inside when the outdoors was so glorious. But that thought lasted about a nanosecond. Was I really concerned about a bunch of news wonks who in all likelihood actually preferred to be indoors rather than in the great outdoors? Fat chance. Dave tried to get me involved in a conversation about UFOs, but I was having none of it this day, so I changed the subject constantly until, for one of the few times that I could remember, he finally gave up on the issue and we passed the rest of the time in idle chatter until we disembarked at Union Station. In the meantime, I had allowed myself to be maneuvered into spending the time with him and his son. I couldn't think of any delicate way to get out of the invitation, and I didn't want to be impolite. I had looked at Paul for some guidance at the time, but he merely shrugged and told me to go ahead, that he would accompany us, and that I might learn something. Naturally, I was the only one who could hear him. I wanted to ride some of the new legs of the Metro Rail subway system because the network had grown considerably since I last had ridden it and I felt like exploring. However, Dave had other ideas. He preferred to walk, which would also give us a bit more privacy, or so he said softly in an almost conspiratorial voice. I don't know how many miles we walked, but it was a good workout throughout downtown. Our route took us across Alameda Street to historic Olvera Street, a narrow cobblestone road less than a block long and not much wider than an alley, and crammed with commercial stalls. Tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, of tourists descend upon it yearly to patronize its dozens of vendor stalls and restaurants that reflect the Spanish influence on the city. Olvera Street runs right through the middle of what's known as El Pueblo de Los Angeles, an interesting collection of historical buildings typical of a Spanish village. Such villages usually were anchored by a central plaza, government buildings, and, of course, a church. Mexican rancho music filled the air as we walked through the plaza. Have you ever heard of the term starseed or starchild? Dave asked as we began our journey. He was back on the subject again, but I was in an expansive mood so I resigned myself to the predictable discourse that was to come. I told him that I thought the terms referred to supposedly hybrid children who are the product of a combination of human DNA and extraterrestrial DNA. I've talked to some people who are firm believers in the existence of such hybrids. These reports have been circulating for years, mostly in the New Age and UFO/alien contact communities, although there have been occasional references to the phenomenon in the mainstream media, including a handful of books by credentialed researchers. Basically, those telling the stories claim that they experienced contact with aliens during which human and extraterrestrial DNA were somehow mixed to produce hybrid children, or at least believed firmly in the existence of such children for one reason or another. Sometimes the humans were said to be donors of eggs or sperm, removed from them voluntarily or taken involuntarily. In other cases, a human female might receive donor alien sperm and actually carry the resultant hybrid child to term, at least according to the theory. I never paid too much attention to the stories. However, I like to think that I remain receptive to any plausible information that might convince me of the story's authenticity. After all, it's a big universe, so why not hybrid children? I'm sure there are stranger things going on out there. But I must tell you, I said to Dave, even though I have personally heard a woman at a workshop claim that she was the mother of such an offspring, I've never met a so-called star child. Really? Say hello to Marco, Dave said. I stopped dead in my tracks, causing a mini traffic jam on the narrow street with half a dozen people being forced to stream around me. I knew the kid was unusual, at least in appearance. He hadn't spoken much so far, although what he did say struck me as pretty advanced in both vocabulary and intellectual acuity for a child of his age. At the time, I assumed that he was just another precocious kid. Well, come to think of it, I guess he was. We resumed our walk. "You are trying to tell me that absolutely he's a star child," Dave said with an approving smile as he laid a gentle and protective hand upon the boy's shoulder. We exited Olvera Street and continued northward on Alameda toward Chinatown. I worked at trying to hear him out, but I was also reserving judgment about whether I was going to accept his story at face value. After all, it smacked of myth and fiction, a tale more fantastic than any news story I had ever come across during my 30 years in the newspaper business. But at that point in my life I could not dismiss the bizarre notion out of hand because of my recent drastic change in thinking regarding alien life forms. According to Dave, he and his wife had tried unsuccessfully for years to have a child, and after consulting several specialists they resigned themselves to the fact that the woman was incapable of conceiving. They both were heartbroken. Shortly afterward, the wife had an extraterrestrial contact in which she was given the opportunity to carry her husband's child. Dave would have to donate some semen, which would be used to fertilize a donor egg from an extraterrestrial female that then would be implanted in his wife. The hybrid child would be theirs to raise as their own. Normally my instinct for being nosy should have demanded at this point that I ask the fundamental questions of who, what, why, when, where, and how, but I didn't. Maybe I really wasn't taking the story seriously yet and was more intent on enjoying the yarn uncritically to see where Dave was taking it. Or perhaps I had simply become so accustomed to hearing tales of extraterrestrial contacts more than one might imagine that it does not even raise an eyebrow anymore. Whatever the reason, I don't have any details on who the purported aliens were, what the circumstances of the meeting were, where or when the first contact took place, or why or how this particular woman, Dave's wife, was chosen for the role. In any case, when offered the opportunity to carry a child, the excited wife talked it over with Dave, and he readily agreed. Arrangements were made and Marco was the beautiful result. Because it was an interspecies transfer, no fertilization could have taken place without some form of genetic intervention. Certain biological procedures had to be performed in order to make the egg and sperm compatible and also to keep the woman's immune system from rejecting the egg. However, the procedure had been devised and perfected many generations earlier, so the process that produced Marco had long before become routine medical practice with this particular alien race. When the boy was old enough to understand the implications, the circumstances of his birth were explained to him. So far I was unconvinced, but I willingly played along to remain civil and also to encourage Dave to keep talking. It was a fascinating story and I was smitten with curiosity. "How long ago was that?" I asked. "What, when he was born?" Dave responded. "No, Dad," Marco interjected, "he means when was I told?" "Perceptive kid." "About a year ago, when I was 8," Marco answered for his father. "You are only 9?" I asked, taken by surprise. "You seem older. I would have guessed 11 to 13. Dave beamed proudly. There was no doubt that he had bonded with his son, but I wondered how the wife was taking it. "So you don't know who your biological mother is?" I asked Marco. But before he could answer, I turned to Dave. "Where does he live? Do you take care of him? Are you still married? What does your wife think? How has she adjusted to the situation?" "Wait. One question at a time," Marco cut in. "Let me answer your first question and then Dad can answer the others. No, I don't know who my biological mother is. But as far as I am concerned, my real mother is the woman who is raising me, my father's wife. Maybe someday when I reach adulthood I will meet my biological mother, but I have no compelling interest in doing so at this time. Perhaps I'll change my mind. If I do, the search should be relatively routine, because there are records." I stared in admiration at him. This was definitely one bright kid. I know a lot of adults, probably including myself, who would have a hard time stringing together a series of sentences like that right off the tops of their heads. I'm sure Dad will fill you in on the rest. I think I'm going to leave now, the boy said. Where to? I asked. Exploring, then home, he replied simply. To my amazement, he gave Dave a hug, shook hands with me, said goodbye, and doubled back toward downtown. Dave and I continued our walk toward Chinatown. Will he be all right by himself? I asked as we left Marco. He's fine. He's very mature for his age. If he wanted to travel around the world by himself, I wouldn't stand in his way. I'd miss him something terrible, but I wouldn't stop him. According to the father, the boy is quite independent and capable of taking care of himself, although he lets his parents dote on him as though he were as dependent upon them as any child his age would be. Marco's extraterrestrial mother knows that he exists, and there is a complete file on her as an egg donor in some distant hall of records, including her name, date of birth, planet of birth, species, genealogy for several generations, medical history, and other pertinent information. Also, Dave insists. I had to admit it was an amusing and entertaining yarn so far. In answer to the flurry of questions I had fired at Dave right before Marco left, Dave said his wife has bonded with the boy as tightly as any mother could possibly connect with any offspring. She loved him dearly and was totally devoted to him. I was glad of that. That was strange, I thought. Why did I feel pleased to hear about the woman's affection for the boy? It was as though I was beginning to believe the story, even though I kept telling myself that I was still unconvinced. By the time we reached Chinatown, I had learned that Marco's biological mother, I don't even know if that is the proper characterization for the female who donated the egg, is humanoid in appearance, but her looks would draw only passing interest because of the dissimilarities between the two species. Nevertheless, I thought, she must be a beauty because Marco got his good looks from somewhere, and it certainly wasn't from Dave. When Marco reaches adulthood, and I never learned when that will occur, he will be given the opportunity to meet the female egg donor. Biologically, would Dave's wife be the real mother even as a surrogate who carried the child to term but didn't contribute the egg? I just don't know, and I wasn't presumptuous or brazen enough to ask. I suppose there are moral and ethical issues involved. Of course, the question would be relevant only if Dave's story was true. The thought that he could be delusional crossed my mind more than once during our outing. Marco is one of thousands of star children, according to Dave. Again, I never could pin down a precise number. Not all star children live on other planets, Dave explained. Sometimes eggs are taken from human females and fertilized with alien sperm, and sometimes sperm is taken from human males and used to fertilize the eggs of alien females. In such cases, the resultant children are more apt to be raised in the alien cultures. On the other hand, sometimes the sperm of alien males is surreptitiously inserted into the eggs of human women, and the offspring are allowed to be born and raised in an Earth culture. In many such instances, the mother has no inkling that her very ordinary human bundle of joy is actually a very extraordinary hybrid star child. In other instances, such as Dave's, the mother is fully aware of the process and is a willing subject. There is a branch of alien science, Dave claimed, that deals with the study of hybrid children who are raised in a variety of cultures. That is, hybrid children who are raised off Earth are contrasted with hybrids who are raised on Earth. The differences between the two and the influences of the cultures and environments that could account for those differences are put under the microscope, figuratively speaking. This is all according to Dave, of course. It was wacky, but for the time being I was willing to suspend my disbelief and listen objectively. We found a bench on a Chinatown street and sat down to take a breather. We had been walking for quite a while. Tantalizing food smells fill the air, and we soon decided to enter a nearby restaurant. The tourist season was over, so the vast majority of people who passed us were of Asian descent. Sitting in this crowded spot, it was hard for me not to stare at the young women and girls who strode by. I found myself conflicted at times, trying to decide whether to enjoy the sight of them approaching or to turn my attention to the equally appealing sight of them walking away. Either girl watching or walking, or perhaps both, are strenuous activities, because I was suddenly aware that I had worked up an appetite. We entered a cafe. I sucked down my glass of lemonade before the fried noodles that I had ordered arrived. "You are pretty good with those things," Dave said admiringly, nodding toward the chopsticks that I was using to shovel the noodles into my face. "You don't need a fork, huh?" He was using a fork. "Nope," I said between bites. "I only ask for a fork when I have soup. I can't seem to get the chopsticks to work on soup." Paul, standing nearby, seemed to roll his eyes, and I almost expected to hear him groan. Not everyone takes a fancy to my attempts at levity. I find that children seem to appreciate them more than adults. He looked at me strangely for a moment and then chuckled. After we split the bill, we continued our walk. We headed south on Broadway through the Civic Center and down to First Street. I took a walk around the Los Angeles Times building. It had been my home away from home for 25 years, and I must admit to a certain pang of nostalgia. I had spent a lot of good years in that building with a lot of good people. But time brings change, and in the final few years the job had become less fun and less rewarding. Also, the personalities of a few of the new people I had to work with didn't mesh well with mine. I found myself laughing less and less at work. That helped to motivate me to take the early retirement buyout offer when I was a mere 58. Finally, we headed north on Spring Street, cut over to Alameda, and returned to Union Station. Although I could see him as an apparition, Paul never said a word to me during those hours, although he had been nearby all of the way. Dave wanted to head back home, but I told him I wanted to pay another visit to the Times. "One thing, though, before you go," I said. "Why did you decide to tell me about your son? I mean, I'm sure it's something that you and your family keep a pretty tight lid on." "Why me? And why now?" "You're right, hardly anybody knows. Marco is going to be really successful when he's an adult. I mean, well, he's already special. You know what I mean?" I knew that he was groping for words. I suspect that Dave never went to college. His grandma and vocabulary could have used some improvement. "Yes, he is an exceptional child," I said, "and I expect that he will become an equally exceptional adult." "Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, exceptional," Dave said. "Do you know that he doesn't have to go to school? He learns everything on his own. Imagine that. He's a what's the word question mark a vivacious reader and very curious. But he'll have to go to college because he'll need the degree to get a job, or get a license to become a professional, or whatever he decides to do with his life." "Right, voracious," I said as delicately as I could. "Yeah, that's what I meant." He still hadn't answered my questions, though, and I'd brought him back to them. "Oh, yeah," he said, "it's just that I really trust you. And I thought you would understand and still keep it to yourself, and not ridicule me or make fun of me. I liked your books, and I knew that I could tell you." "Oh, boy, have I wanted to tell someone for a long time. But we're not supposed to go blabbing it around. They said most people wouldn't believe me, so why ask for trouble?" they said. I told Dave that I appreciated the faith and trust he had placed in me, and by then I was feeling a bit guilty about some of the thoughts about him that had crossed my mind as he'd related his story over the hours. I did not seek Dave's permission to use his story in this book. However, I have taken every precaution to protect his anonymity so as not to violate his trust. I have simply related a tale, true or not, and have not exposed him to the possibility of any public ridicule. We shook hands and said goodbye on the sidewalk near the entrance to the train station, and he headed off to catch his ride. I then spotted Paul in full incarnate form, still dressed in the suit and carrying the briefcase, walking toward me. He and Dave passed one another close enough to touch. Paul, in his inimitable teasing style, smiled and said good afternoon to Dave, who remained oblivious to the greeting. Perhaps he didn't hear it, but I did. I knew that the gesture was for my benefit, my entertainment, actually. It was a typical Paul shenanigan. Pedestrians sidestepped Paul, as he did them, so I knew that he was truly visible this time for the whole world to see. But he was just another guy on the streets of the big city, and what more fitting city to be in than the City of Angels. What do you make of that? I asked as we started walking again. Do you think that story is true? It sounds crazy to me. But Dave doesn't seem crazy. He's not highly educated, and he's probably a bit naive, but he seems sane enough. Do you think Marco is really a hybrid? I guess I should have given Paul a chance to respond, but the questions just came pouring out of me. We cut over to Broadway and headed toward the Times Building again. I was feeling invigorated from the exercise and just being outdoors in the bustle and excitement of the city on a splendid day. It's a very large universe, Paul replied. There's room for some mighty strange things. In fact, I suspect that your most outrageous and extreme fantasy could never equal the reality of what exists out there. It ranges from the stunningly beautiful to the abominably grotesque, and everything in between. As for whether Dave's story about Marco is true, I leave that to you decide. I thought you would find the idea of such tinkering with nature abhorrent, I said. Aren't you offended? I must admit that even I, a non-religious person, would find the practice slightly disturbing if it turned out to be a fact. If this is really being done, I would like to know why, I said. What possible reason could there be and what purposes would be served? Paul said that if indeed such practices were going on and he would neither confirm nor deny whether he had any knowledge of the subject, he suspected that the answer would be phrased in lofty scientific, psychological, and social terms, but what it would really come down to was because they could. Just as plant life has been cross-pollinated and animals crossbred for a long time here on Earth, the adherents of a starseed program most likely highlighters would claim that such a program is geared toward improvement of the species. Eventually the conversation got around once again to previous discussions that we had had concerning the complex and convoluted hidden dynamics of my extended family, specifically and the typical family in general. Despite the stereotype of the harmonious TV family of the 1950s, I believe that the average family, American and otherwise, is rife with discord. What did I tell you at that time? I told you to remember the conversation because there was an important message that is, people are not always who they say or believe they are, and rarely are they what others think they are. I will concede that you did say that, I said with mock stiff formality. Good. Okay, Marco is a prime example of that very message. Remember also when we first began meeting that I told you that you would get a chance to develop and hone your telepathic skills? I also concede that point, I acknowledged in the same manner. You said most people have the inherent ability but that few ever discover it, let alone use it. I don't know why I was being so flippant with my responses. Perhaps the stress of the hours-long conversation with Dave, during which I felt compelled to maintain a serious, if not somber, expression. In any case, Paul didn't respond to my attempt at levity. He said that he wanted me to begin experimenting with trying to send and receive telepathic messages. I put aside my juvenile attitude and settled down, at which time something else suddenly registered on my brain. Paul had just talked about Marco as though he knew him. I immediately grilled him on that point, and he admitted that he had made certain arrangements for me to run into Dave and Marco at the train station. You set it up? I asked. I arranged for you to be there and hoped that Dave would spot you. I didn't directly contact him or the boy, no. They don't know I exist. To tell you the truth, I had tried several times in the past to put the three of you in contact, but something happened each time to keep the meeting from occurring. You kept missing each other by seconds. This time, it finally worked. Dave spotted you. He had Marco with him, and your personalities just did what comes naturally. You know, I said to Paul at one point on our walk, it's pretty obvious that we are not off on a random adventure or just engaging in idle chatter. My instincts tell me that a lot of things we have talked about today have had a purpose. It's that manifest, is it? He said with a grin. Sometimes it takes me a second or two to catch on to his teasing. Well, you are right. and I commend you on your discernment," he continued. Now I wondered if he was turning the tables and being frivolous with me. "Whatever," he continued in a serious vein, "Marco is an extraordinary boy with a great gift. He is a natural telepath,